Welcome to Bloodbath, the true crime podcast. I'm Ashley.
And I'm Jamie. And this is a special bath bomb episode where we read our listener stories.
Yep. You write to us and we just read it.
Like verbatim. So Yay. Whatever is said cannot be legally bound to us because we're just reading what you guys wrote us and that's that.
Don't shoot the messenger. That's also true crime. We'll cover it. Fuck you.
Yeah. No violence, please.
All right. So my first story is from Lynn's Stephen. Stephen.
Yeah. Right? One or the other. I don't know. Sometimes it's...
It looks like Stefan, like from your vampire show.
Shut the fuck up.
All right. Hey, y'all. Hope this finds you well. Smiley face. This story isn't mine personally, but it is my grandma's and one I've heard numerous times over the years. It's also more creepy than it is scary, but I felt like you two might enjoy it. Hopefully you guys do too. In about 1985, my grandma's brother and wife bought a new house in the outskirts of the town they were living in and wanted some company to come stay and help them unpack. My grandma, my mom, and my cousin decided they would come stay for a few days and help out. My grandma said when they got there, she immediately felt extremely uncomfortable since there was this black ring in the sky around the top of the house.
What?
What? She also said that the driveway began... being as long as it was and the huge expanse of woods behind the house only added to the uneasiness of the situation. The first day they spent there wasn't too bad. Once my grandma got past the faint blood splatter that was on the wall leading upstairs, she says that looking back on it, she never did go upstairs because something kept telling her not to and she wasn't welcome upstairs. They all went to sleep that night, and throughout the night, they could hear footsteps walking upstairs, which was odd because everyone was on the main floor, but did nothing about it on account of how tired they were. The next morning, everyone woke up and went outside to start unloading more of the packed cars, and worked diligently for hours going in and out of the house. At some point throughout all the moving, my great uncle's wife realized that she couldn't find her 9-year-old son and began to search for him. She started getting worried after a few minutes since he wasn't responding to her calling his name, which was very unlike him. So everyone started helping her look for him. They searched for him for 30 minutes to no avail and came to the conclusion that he must have gone out into the woods. No one there knew how big the field was nor where it led to. So they called the police department and asked if some sheriff deputies could come out and assist them in looking for him. Once the police got there, everyone searched for hours and hours, but ultimately couldn't find him. The deputies were needed back at the station, so they left. My mom says that she remembers the boy's mom being extremely upset, understandably so, and turning around to go back into the house when she ran into the boy. She was elated to see him, but was angry that he had run off. Everyone started gathering around the two, and my grandma asked him where he had been, and his response was something she said she'll never forget. He looked at her with dead eyes and said, "What do you mean? I've been right here the whole time."
No,
I don't like that. There was also an instance when my grandma was in her late 20s when she and a few of her friends decided to go check out one of the old churches in town that just burned down. The place was rumored to be haunted since the only thing that hadn't burned down was the Bible and the stand the Bible was sitting on. When they got there, one of the girls decided she wanted to have some fun and took the Bible off the stand and put it in the back of the trunk of the car they were all in. My grandma said before the girl could even close the trunk of the car that the girl had passed out as soon as she had let go of the Bible. I know these stories are strange and definitely sound fake, but I can assure you that my grandmother isn't the type of person to lie, especially about things like that. The material lineage of my family are all very well in touch with our intuition, I guess you could call it. For reference, my great-grandma told my mom that she was pregnant with me just by looking in her eyes. Ooh. My mom had no idea that she was pregnant until my great-grandma told her that and found out the day after when she bought a pregnancy test. Sorry, I lost my place. My grandma has always been touchy. There's not really a good word I could find to explain it. With spirits, my mom can tell of a person's character just by looking at them and meeting them for the first time. And I personally have dreams that come true. They're normally bad dreams that end up happening the day after I have them. Best wishes, Lindsay.
Holy smokes.
You haven't watched Haunting of Hill House?
I have not.
That happens in Haunting of Hill House where they're like looking for the girl, but she's standing right there and they can't see her and they can't hear her. Ooh, it's so creepy.
That is really creepy.
Yeah.
Yikes. I didn't like that part.
I know, right? I've been right here the entire time. Like, what do you say? Like, tell them they're lying, like, and then make them feel crazier?
You know? Or, I mean, what if they were hiding, playing hide and seek, and like...
They're fucking with you.
Fucking with you. Exactly. You never know. All right. Well, I have a story. A bath bomb, which we have heard last year, but yes, it has been remixed.
Let's go.
This comes from our good friend Moth.
Yay.
Hello, my loves. Moth here. Of course, feel free to use my name, and any other names in the story have been changed out of respect, so no need to censor yourselves there. Anyway, thanks. Here's my fairly absurd, but also completely true, double feature true crime and paranormal experience story from the shit show that was my childhood.
Yes.
Once upon a hot minute ago, my sister and I were a couple of wee children growing up in Southern Illinois. Gross. I was always an outdoorsy kid and loved hanging out in my backyard, except for that one goddamn corner. My house was on a double lot with a pretty big hill that my house sat on top of. We had a few neighbors whose backyards were backed up against ours, one of which was at the bottom of the hill. This neighbor's name was Clyde. Never trust Clyde.
No.
And he was one of the nicest people you'd ever meet. Shit. His backyard was fenced in, and he had a really big apple tree that grew over the fence that he would always let us pick apples from. Unfortunately, I was absolutely terrified of that specific corner of our backyard. So no apples for me.
No.
I went on walks frequently to my friends' houses in the neighborhood, and walking through that corner would have been a perfect shortcut, but fuck that, y'all.
Yeah.
I may be lazy, but I sure as shit did not want to walk through that area. Now, Moth, I hear you ask, what the hell was wrong with that corner? It's literally just a normal backyard. Yeah, sure. But here's some important background info. My whole life, I've been pretty sensitive to the paranormal, and to this day, I'm pretty damn sure a whole ass demon hung out there.
Mm-hmm.
I can't even begin to describe the disgusting feeling I got in my stomach anytime I got near it, and honestly still do anytime I visit my parents' house. My sister felt the same throughout our entire childhood, and other friends who are sensitive to the paranormal did as well without us even telling them our thoughts on that spot. Because who the fuck is going to be friends with me after I tell them I'm afraid of a smallish corner of my backyard?
Me.
That shit's weird, dude. We didn't tell anyone. I would always see things out of the corner of my eye there that would linger a little too long when I would look at it. I had nightmares constantly about a terrifying monster just lurking there. Like, just picture a combination of Slenderman and a fucked up mutilated goat creature.
No, thank you.
But somehow significantly worse. That sounds terrible.
That sounds terrifying.
When in other parts of the backyard, I felt like someone, or more like something, was mm-hmm. glaring at me from that corner. But when I tried to look, there was nothing there. I wish I could have explained it by my neighbor being a creepy dude, but in reality, Clyde was extremely kind and could never hurt a fly. The corner remained a mystery until I discovered the real reason behind the dreadful feeling there, and it was really quite sinister. Fast forward to when I'm about 17. My mom, sister, and I are telling stories about our paranormal encounters at my grandmother's memorial service. Maybe a little morbid, but just how we are. Same.
We get that.
I start talking about my feelings about the corner in the backyard, and my sister started chiming in about how she had a lot of the same feelings and would see things down there too. Mind you, we had never told my mother about this for whatever reason. As we were talking, my mom just went silent, which literally never happens, because when I tell you that my mom never stops talking, I mean it.
Oh my God.
When I noticed her being quiet, I of course asked her what was wrong. Because I really didn't think our stories about the backyard were that freaky to render her speechless. She started telling us about something she had intentionally sheltered us from until that time. A murder.
Oh no.
And a murder most foul. How is this murder really relevant, you ask? Well, let me explain. A while before we had moved into the house, our neighbor Clyde's three sons lived with him. Until learning the story, I was under the impression that Clyde only had one son. Turns out... One day, long before my family lived there, one of Clyde's sons just snapped and killed one of his brothers in that exact corner of the backyard.
Oh!
Apparently, Clyde had told my parents all about it when we had moved in because he was a nice guy and just wanted them to be aware of the history of the lot we were living on.
So he did the job that the realtor is supposed to do.
Exactly. The son that had killed the other pleaded insanity and was being held in a mental health facility. The remaining son still lived with Clyde for quite a while to help him out around the house and whatnot, which explains why I thought he only had one son, because he's the only one I ever saw around.
Yeah.
As far as I know, Clyde's son who committed the murder is still in the mental health facility, but sadly, Clyde passed away fairly recently. I'm not sure what his other son is up to now, but I hope he's doing okay. My theory is that there is some sort of dark entity that lurks in that corner of the yard, and it may have influenced Clyde's son to do what he did that day. I don't think Clyde's son is the one haunting that spot, mainly because both my sister and My sister and I feel that whatever is there is an extremely old entity, much older than the time of the murder. Okay. I believe whatever it is still there. I am 23 now, and like I mentioned before, I'm still really wary of that corner of the yard. To me, that's saying something, as I'm pretty uncomfortable in my relationship with the paranormal now. I hope you enjoyed going through that journey of a story with me. Happy Scaratonin season.
Yay.
But wait, there's more. Oh. Bye, 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 bye. Moth. Thank you, Moth. I hate it.
I loved it. I mean, I hate that he was murdered, but like, great story.
Totally agree, though, that there's something there that made the brother snap.
You think so?
I do.
You don't think he's maybe just like part of the new entity that there, or like the old entity, like it sucked him in as part of him?
Maybe.
You know?
Maybe.
All right. So my next one, it's by an emergency dispatcher.
Oh.
I know.
Oh my.
Okay. So her name's Alyssa. And it goes as follows. Hello, you bad bitches. My name is Alyssa. Feel free to use my name, and my pronouns are she and her. Thank you. I was finally able to write to you after a really busy but refreshing week. This case I have for you is the disappearance and assumed murder of Joyce Alice Fisher. I could have given you a brief overview of what I already know, but that's not me. And I wouldn't be a bloodbather. There it goes. Bloodbather if I didn't dive further.
Woo!
I came across this case at work one night. For almost 3 years, I worked as an emergency dispatcher. One of those years spent mostly on the night shift. At night, it can get pretty stale and to fight off the sleepy eyes. You find something to do, whether it's fuck with the officers and pull pranks, or actually get the file cabinet organized again, in parentheses. On this particular night, my partner and I were going through the file cabinets to make sure everything was in alphabetical order and in the right place. I spotted a worn-out envelope with the name Joyce Fisher written across the top. I pulled out the contents. The paper was that soft, thick, flimsy tan paper that I used to draw on as a kid. It was the entry of her disappearance from 1978. From the time she was entered into the National Crime Information Center to the day I was holding it in my hands, Joyce had been missing and presumed dead for 42 years. Cue the investigation.
Dun, dun, dun.
My partner and I spent any quiet moments we had that night Googling and asking our coworkers questions regarding the case. For me, this is one of those cases that lingers in my mind. While that night we didn't get very many answers, I later did my own research after I left the department. On April 16th, 1978, 28-year-old Joyce Fisher walked out of her parents' summer cottage on Indian Lake in Dowagiac. Bless your heart, she did the pronunciation for me.
Oh, perfect.
Pronounced Dowagiac, Michigan. Dowagiac, Michigan. Yay. Thank you so much. For the first time, Joyce had pale skin, green eyes, and blonde hair. She was last seen wearing a blue nylon jacket, a blue plaid shirt, and blue jeans. She had been living in Illinois, with her parents since the previous December when she left her job as a special education teacher at Dowagiac. Okay, it's spelled Dowagiac. See my problem? Yeah. But she's coming through for me. Union schools and filed for divorce. Joyce was back in the Southwest Michigan area to allow her estranged husband, Jerry Fisher, to visit with their daughter as she did every 2 weeks. On this particular day, Joyce left the cottage around 3 p.m. to sign over a car titled Jerry. They met at Bell's Corner Store, where Joyce left her vehicle and stole and told the owner of the store she would be right back for it. When Jerry returned, witnesses told police that he was alone. Joyce was never heard from again, and after she got into his car, Jerry stated that he did, in fact, return Joyce to her car around 4 p.m. because she had brought along the wrong paperwork. However, the 1969 Buick she had arrived in remained at the corner store until after she disappeared, leaving no indication of a struggle and no clues to where she may have gone. Many people worried if she maybe would have just taken off, as she was under stress due to her looming divorce from Jerry. According to her family, she would never leave like that. Everybody says there's no way she would go away and leave her family like that, especially her child, police told Marshall Evening Chronicle. At the time of her disappearance, it was known to her family that Jerry had abused her in the past, both mentally and physically. She was scared of him. Her father described Jerry as having a very volatile temperament. and her mother told reporters that Joyce wanted the nightmare to end. In 1979, Jerry was accused of beating his and Joyce's daughter. The incident caused him to lose custody of the child to Joyce's parents, and Jerry was refused any visitation rights. Sounds pretty cut and dry, right?
Mm-hmm.
Wife went missing and the husband did it. Case closed. Well, not so much. Jerry's entire defense was centered around the claim that Joyce was living a secret life. Jerry's attorney alleged that Jerry and Joyce were friends with two other subjects, and the four of them had become part of a drug ring that stretched from Dowagiac to South Bend to Chicago. The allegations go on to say that Joyce was trafficking cocaine and her disappearance was a direct result of this high-risk lifestyle she was living, as the two other subjects involved were shot execution style in 1980. Throughout the investigation, Jerry had made several ominous remarks like, "I wouldn't worry about it. My wife is gone and nobody's going to find her," a witness told Harold Palladium. A jury convicted Jerry of involuntary manslaughter in 1988, and he was sentenced to 7.5 to 15 years before the court honored his appeal in 1992 due to the prosecutor not showing up for oral arguments, which is something that is very Cass County of them, but I always reserve my thoughts on that so I don't get sued. On legal.com, where the court's appeal decision is published, there is a comment at the bottom from someone claiming to be Sheldon Waxman, one of Jerry's defense attorneys. It reads, "I was a defense lawyer. What shouldn't have been charged was conspiracy to murder. Unfortunately, the other conspirators were murdered." Whoa.
Ooh.
My grandmother, who is a lifelong resident of Dowagiac, remembers this case vividly. She says there was talk about the owners of the corner store actually covering for Jerry and helping him by feeding Joyce's body to the pigs on their farm.
Oh, shit.
However, this is all speculation and rumors of the town. To this day, Joyce's body has never been found. Will we ever know what happened to her? Perhaps not. And that's why it's so important to keep these stories alive. Joyce was a human being, and she and her family deserve an answer. I know it was long, but there was just so much to include. I hope you enjoyed it, and I hope it keeps you questioning what really happened that day. I love your podcast, and I'm so happy to have found you lovely ladies. Toodles for now, Alyssa.
Aw, thanks, Alyssa.
Wow.
That's a lot to unpack there.
That's so much to unpack.
So Jerry.
Jerry did it.
But he had help.
But like the theory of, I might need to take a deep dive.
Yeah.
Just a peekaroo on this one. Thank you, Alyssa, and thank you for your time with as a dispatcher. It's about once a month where I'm like, maybe I'll do it, and I don't do it because I'm scared.
Yeah, my aunt, I was telling her at one point when I was younger that I wanted to do it, and she was just like, the amount of stress, she's like, I don't know, like the test you have to go through just to make it.
Yeah,
good on you,
good job.
Well, our next story is from Janae Sweet. Hello, BBs. Thank you for always being my good good.
No, oh my God, I'm gonna cry. Stop.
I am Janae, and I thought my family's favorite ghost story may fall in perfectly for Scaritonin.
Yay.
Let's set the stage. I was born and raised in a Southern California town best known for Roy Rogers and Dale Evans. My family is large and blended as my dad started having children at 16 and stopped at 49.
Wow.
Most people thought my dad was my grandpa and my two eldest brothers could be my dads. Nice. Here is how I thought I fell in the sibling hierarchy. Jeff, first wife. Wesley, second wife. Josh, third wife, my mom. Jessica, Jacob, me. Tristan, fourth and final wife.
Oh, Tristan. One of my favorite names.
And the way they spell it is T-R-Y-S-T-A-N. That's cool.
That's how we would spell it too.
I love it.
If he would do it.
In the summer of 1996, I shared a room with my sister, who was 11, and she was hosting a sleepover, so I was banished to the den because I was 6 and my sister is a cunt.
Yes! Hit him with the hard tea.
Anyway, after waking up at 3 a.m. and walking toward the hallway to use the restroom, I get the sense someone is watching me.
Oh no.
And is behind me, so I haul ass to the bathroom and shut and lock the door. After not hearing any noise, I assumed maybe it was a sleepover guest coming back from getting water or something. So I use the restroom, and I will just go back to sleep on the couch. After stepping back into the hallway, my eyes adjust to the darkness. I see something in the living room of where nothing was supposed to be.
Oh no.
Completely out of place.
Stop it.
I froze just trying to figure out what this hazy thing was. it starts moving towards
me. Stop it. I have goosebumps. Stop it.
I start screaming, running towards my mom's bedroom at the end of the hallway, reach the doorknob and twist the knob. It's locked.
No.
I keep screaming and banging on her door while looking at the hazy figure coming into focus. It's small. It's not walking. It's crawling towards me.
Oh my God. Full body chills.
I try my room across from my mom's. I couldn't open the door as something was in front of it, probably a sleeping girl. My only option now is to try my brother's room, which is next to mine, but towards that crawling thing. I stay in the hall trying to work out my next move, and that thing is moving slow, so I book it to my brother's and start banging on the door without removing any eyes from that thing. As it gets closer, I get a sense of familiarity. But what? Who? I realize it's a fucking ghost baby.
What?
Just as I make that realization, my brothers yank me into the room and Josh steps out with a bat while Jacob, 8, shields me from whatever I was screaming murder from. Josh, 13, turns on all the house lights and secures the house. When he returns to the room, he asks me what I saw, and I told him a ghost baby. He and Jacob look stricken and say I must have had a bad dream, and I'll be sleeping in Josh's bed while he sleeps in front of the door, just in case.
Oh, good brothers.
The following morning, while watching Blue's Clues, Jacob comes out with a drawing pad and had me describe what I saw, and he attempted to draw it. He is now a great artist.
Love that.
After he was done, he tells me, oh, that's just our brother Gabriel. He died in this house. I immediately thought that this was horseshit. I've never heard of Gabriel. Mom only named us with J's, and they lied and told me I was left on the doorstep by gypsies last summer. Jacob yells for Mom, and when she appears, he tells her, Janae saw Gabriel last night and thinks I'm lying. I was shocked when she told me to get dressed because we're going out.
Oh, no.
Shortly after, I was alone with my mom in her 1995 Toyota Previa minivan, going for a drive in utter silence to the local cemetery. We get out and start walking, and she points out a maple tree and tells me she and my dad planted this tree for Gabriel, and leads me 5 feet away to a headstone that reads, Gabriel Justin Sweet, February 20th, 1987, May 3rd, 1987. She told me Gabriel was supposed to be the last baby she and my dad wanted to have, but he died of SIDS.
Oh, no.
She found him not breathing, was taken to the hospital, and pronounced dead. The decision was made to keep Gabriel mementos separate so they would be safe for her and dad. They made Jacob with such purpose, and they kept vital monitors on him and me, the whoops baby, as infants. I asked why he doesn't have a J first name, and she told me that grandma was sick of the J names, so she understandably returned to the J names with her last two children. My parents' marriage, like many others of those who lost a child, would not last. My parents were separated when I was born and divorced when I was 5. I was the only child that would go with her to the cemetery until she passed away August 2nd, 2010. She is buried alongside Gabriel as she wanted. Updated sibling hierarchy. Jeff is from the first wife. Allison, found on the ancestry.com. Wesley, second wife. Josh from the third wife, my mom. Jessica, Gabriel, Jacob, me, Tristan, fourth and final wife. Never saw another ghost again. Happy spooky season. And she sent us pictures of these, the tombstone. Thank you. That was... God. Wickedly scary and then sweet at the end.
That was a roller coaster of emotions. I had full body chills. I took a photo of my goosebumps, but I also have very Chewbacca hairy legs right now, so y'all ain't gonna see it.
I love how the brothers are just like, oh yeah, you saw Gabriel, no big deal.
Oh, that's just Gabriel. Yeah, he'll be fine. And she's like, what the fuck?
you lying.
I know nothing about that.
Wow.
All right.
What an amazing bath bomb. Thank you.
That was. Mm-hmm. I want more stories from you. Mm-hmm. Dig some more up. All right, I have a last one. It is literally 2 seconds long, and it is from our friend Katie. And it says, one time I went to go make coffee, and when I opened my coffee container, there was none in there.
Oh, thanks, Katie. That's terrible.
She put that into the fucking submissions.
That is my worst nightmare.
It is.
How dare you? Honestly, we were having a great time until that story.
Right?
Thank you all so much for submitting those bath bombs. They're fantastic and scary and spooky and perfect. And send more.
And it's not only for scarotonin season. This is for blood bath season.
Which is always.
Which is every Friday. Every month. Always. Forever. Until next time.
But wait.
There's more.
Bye. 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 Bye.